We are going to energize the country.
We need to wake up and smell the coffee.
No more Mr. Nice Guy.
Another future's possible, but we've got to fight for it.
Order!
Hello and welcome to the Debated podcast. As always, I'm your host, Will. In this episode, I'm delighted to be joined by Joe Jervis, who is the director of a new group that has been set up in relation to the Labour Party, a new internal Labour group, Labour Renaissance. Welcome to the podcast, Joe.
Hi, Will. Thank you very much for having me on.
So the first question that I'd like to ask is, what made you decide to become involved with this group, to set this group up?
Well, this group's, we've been thinking about it for a fair few months now, probably actually more than a year, since Labour lost the 2019 general election so spectacularly. And I think Renaissance is almost kind of, you know, 10 years overdue, if you like, because if you look at the way the Labour Party has performed in the last four elections and our struggles to really connect with people across the country, I think we're due a renaissance, so to speak. I think the fact that we've particularly struggled in the last election, the last two or three elections amongst voters in the towns across the country, where we've really gone backwards and become really, unfortunately, a party mainly focused or winning votes from graduates in the cities. I think we really need a group within the party that is actually going to say, hang on, this is what we need to do to reconnect with those towns and communities across the country that feel that Labour has moved away from them, really. It's not so much about them moving away from Labour. It's about Labour moving away from those communities and those communities not really being sure what or who Labour stands for anymore. And it's not about one leader. It's about the direction the party's taken as a whole. Although I think in the last election we saw that a particular type of politics of the left was particularly damaging and particularly kind of put people off the Labour Party. But it's not really about one person, one leader. It's about the movement really reconnecting with those communities and us helping Keir Starmer to do that. This is all about helping Keir Starmer reconnect with those, particularly those former voters we're focusing on first, those voters who kind of want to vote Labour or have voted Labour or feel they could in the future, but they just don't feel that they can at the moment and they haven't been able to do for the last few elections. So we'll be going out to those voters, reaching out to those voters through kind of outreach projects, but also delivering our findings to Labour HQ, if you like, leader's office, in a hope that we can be useful to finding out more about those voters and coming up with ideas really about the kind of future of the country, not so much specific policies, but the direction that the country needs to go in, to really kind of appeal across different parts of Britain.
You talk about the direction of the party there, and I think certainly that's one of the analyses that has dominated as to why Labour did so badly in the 2019 election. A lot of people also say that Labour's stance on Brexit in 2019 and prior to that alienated a great deal of voters. Do you think that Brexit was a factor in the 2019 result for Labour?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a factor. A kind of mix of a feeling from people. I mean, we've been doing, I should say, a series of focus groups, and we'll have a report out in September looking at what we found by talking to kind of dozens of Labour former voters. And Brexit certainly came up. There was a desire, though, to kind of look forward and recognise that we are, this is kind of the point to begin the next journey, and we shouldn't keep looking back and kind of regretting this or regretting that. We need to talk about the kind of positive post-Brexit future that Britain has, and it does have a positive post-Brexit future. We can argue about whether it'd be more or less positive if we were still in the EU, but we do have a positive future of the country, and we've got a lot going for us, and Labour needs to be talking about that rather than going over old ground. But yes, you're absolutely right that the issue of Brexit was coming up, partly because people didn't know what our policy was, and partly because if they did know, they didn't like that we were back in a second referendum. So I think that's, yeah, I think that is an issue that we need to move on from the party. But I think the overwhelming feeling is that Labour shouldn't be looking back at that. Labour should be looking forward.
Mm. One of the things that was highlighted by Stephen Kinnock when he was discussing this group with Labour List is that the group wanted to highlight sound and sensible management of the public finances, and that people the group had spoken to were concerned about overexposure to imports from countries like China and the collapse of the manufacturing sector in Britain. Do you think that really the main focus for Labour should be looking at those economic failings, whether it be Britain being overly dependent on imports from other countries and not producing enough ourselves? And do you think that that is the kind of like the crux of where you'll be able to get some of these red wall voters back to the Labour Party?
Yeah, I mean, I should say that this is not so much about trying to listen to certain parts of the electorate and essentially just say stuff to, you know, to win them over. This is about talking about a kind of bigger picture story, narrative, direction of travel, whatever you want to call it, for the country and how we talk about where we want to go. And I think you've hit on a good point there around Britain not making, I mean, Rachel Reeves has talked rightly about Britain not making enough, not selling enough, not buying enough British products. So I think that's absolutely the right way to go. I think there's a bigger story in this around the rise of China and the need for Britain to stand on its own two feet, and that doesn't mean that we don't work with our international allies. We're still an internationalist party. We work with our democratic allies, and we, you know, we team up where we need to and where it benefits them and us. But actually, we should recognise now that it's not particularly healthy to have so much Chinese money in our critical national infrastructure and our energy, you know, our energy and so on. That's a potential place for a concern. So I think the key is, yes, we do need a more realistic and less ideological approach, really, to kind of trade and open borders and so on, and just be realistic about what else is happening in the world. I mean, I think, you know, open borders, open trade, I mean, we still support, of course, foreign direct investment and open trade. I mean, that's very important. But we're talking about, you know, kind of critical national infrastructure here, where we need to get a bit wiser, a bit smart. And I think there is a bit of a fear out in the country around that, across the country. And I think that the I think, you know, that is an area that we will be talking about, because I think if you look at what globalization has done to unfettered globalization, I should say, has done to towns across England and Wales, I'm sure parts of Scotland as well, in terms of really kind of, you know, jobs disappearing, the jobs that do come in, the good, well-paid, unionised manufacturing jobs that disappear, replaced by kind of service sector, you know, jobs which aren't particularly jobs that many people really want to do, the kind of low, you know, the kind of call centre jobs and Amazon warehouses and so on. So I think there's definitely an appetite in the country, without looking back at old industries of the past and going backwards, actually looking forward to new kind of high-tech manufacturing and Britain being a leader. And that's definitely a place we want to be in terms of wanting a kind of manufacturing renaissance, if you like, across industrial parts of Britain. So that is a big one. And you touched on the idea of sound financial management. I think it's definitely true that Labour is still, unfortunately, I mean, we know this from just talking to people, but the there's still a big worry that we still haven't quite got to grips with the fact that we need to be focused less on complaining about austerity and more about how we're going to get value for money in public services, how we're going to use taxpayer money to get the best we can possibly get. You know, it's not about, you know, decreased in spending or being pro-austerity or anything like that. Far from it. It's about saying, look, we're going to invest, but this is why, and this is how much money we'll save in the long run by investing in education or investing in services that might not be the kind of NHS frontline services that we all see for ourselves, but the behind-the-scenes services. So, yeah, so both those points that you just made are absolutely spot on in terms of where we think we need to be as a party. And Renaissance is a part of the Labour movement, which I think is best suited and is willing to really stand up and make those arguments.
Mm. One of the other big issues that a lot of people have been talking about and has been a feature of the of by-elections that have occurred recently, including the Chesham and Amersham by-election, is housing and the amount of housing that's built in Britain and where it's built. What do you think the Labour Party's approach to housing has to be? Because, of course, there's a big argument about not just where there should be more housing, but what kind of housing it should be. So what do you think Labour should be focusing on relating to that very hot-button issue of housing?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, I should say that Renaissance hasn't done too much specific policy work on housing. Well, I haven't done any specific policy work on housing yet. And I can't claim to be an expert, but I do think that obviously any housing that's built needs to be quality housing and built for long term. And I think this points to the point of the kind of proving that investment is worthwhile and showing your workings in terms of where that money's been invested, how much has been invested, why we need quality housing, and basically pointing out to why we think that taxpayer money's been well spent. And I think if there's one kind of public sector focus where you can argue that you need investment, and of course work across, partnering with business is a massive part of what Renaissance wants Labour to do. So, you know, working with the private sector to create the conditions to build those houses and so on is absolutely critical. And that is an area really where we should be able to win the argument for proper, sound investment and actually take on. So, I mean, local communities always have to be consulted, but really kind of take on the kind of weaker arguments about, you know, why housing in a certain area shouldn't be built. I think it's important we're on the side of recognising this is a massive problem and wanting quite, you know, bold solutions, bold but credible solutions to the problem and putting our, basically putting out plans and really going for it and promoting them.
Now, I mentioned the Chesham and Amersham by-election there, and this year we've had three by-elections, Hartlepool, Chesham and Amersham, and Batley, and Spen. And with the latter two, it seems that the results of those elections demonstrate that there is perhaps a weakening of the so-called vaccine bounce that the Conservatives seem to benefit from in the local elections and in the Hartlepool by-election. Do you think that the way that Labour is perceived now, that people might be a bit more open to hearing from the Labour Party now that the vaccine bounce is subsiding and with other things related to the government which haven't perhaps shown them in a positive light for voters?
Sure. Well, I think it's a bit, it's very messy at the moment with us coming out of going to kind of stage four of the roadmap. And I think people are starting to see that the Conservatives haven't really got a strong plan. They are divided on it. They don't know where to go. And, you know, we've got part of the country pulling one way and more kind of cautious route. And then other parts of the party being saying, look, we just need to get on with it. Other parts of the country saying that. So I think it's becoming more difficult for them. And of course, the other change is that Keir can get out on the road and he's going around parts of England at the moment. We was last week that had fallen to the Conservatives in the last election and really having good conversations with former voters and doing a good job. So I think that is something which is which means that Labour are getting an ear. I mean, I think this thing is that, you know, the Tories struggling is only one half of the story. Labour needs to prove that it's got an alternative, or at least that it's credible as a government. I think Keir will continue to do that over the next 6 months once he's out on the road a bit more. And I think that's what Renaissance is all about, helping him to do that. But I think you're right that there is the vaccine bounce is still there, certainly, but I think on the around the England football team issues about them failing to support the England football team taking the knee. I don't think cultural issues, by the way, are as big as the kind of the economic stories that we need to tell, which I think still are what people in this country tend to vote on. But I do think that the Conservatives have shown themselves up to be, playing these games and playing these culture wars and around racism. And I think the public aren't stupid. They're starting to see that a little bit. I'm not saying they're turning against the Tories in their numbers, but they do think that the Tories are on the wrong side of that. So that's probably made a little bit of a hit. But I think the big deciding factors will be how the Conservatives perform over the next 6 months in terms of getting us through kind of stage four of the roadmap and how the economy bounces back.
Yeah, something else that has perhaps been a factor of discussions of late, particularly recently, is the relationship between Britain and the EU. There have been rows in the newspaper relating to migrants crossing the English Channel, and Priti Patel paying £54 million to the French government in order to supposedly tackle gangs who are facilitating the migrants crossing the channel. And we've also seen the government attempting to renegotiate the Northern Ireland protocol because of difficulties relating to Northern Ireland and the EU and the rest of the UK. Do you think that going forward, this is an area that Labour should perhaps pay more attention to in terms of some of the costs of Brexit, not necessarily saying that we should reverse the result of the referendum or saying that we should rejoin, but perhaps pointing out some of the difficulties that the government have gotten themselves into relating to Brexit?
Sure, yeah, and I think we should be putting pressure as much as possible on Johnson to sort out the mess that he's created, and point out that we don't want to go back and renegotiate the deal, but we do want to make the tweaks, and we do want him to make the tweaks that are necessary to it. And also point out that, he was promising this to be the great, fantastic deal and so on. And then he hasn't delivered that. But I do think there is a balance a line that needs to be, a tightrope, if you like, needs to be walked in terms of like making sure we point out these things, but also showing that actually we're not trying to open up old divisions within the country between Remainers and Leavers, because that's not what we want. So, but you're right. I think we should be pushing Boris, to say, look, come on, you knew what you signed up for. Go and sort the problem out. On the immigration the border crossing specifically. I just think it's shameful that Priti Patel is constantly, trying to create Daily Telegraph headlines, which are just kind of, one-liners, whether, we're going to have all refugees on an island in the middle of the sea, or, whatever ridiculous policy it is, just, that's getting leaked to the papers to try and make the government look strong on this stuff, or tough, but actually they haven't got any kind of plan whatsoever. If she was more interested in, if she was creating a proper plan, rather than actually just trying to go with these very, very right wing really headlines around the kind of possible non-solutions, then I think we might be getting somewhere. Look at foreign aid, for instance. We're cutting foreign aid. Why can't we Why can't we kind of channel some of that money to supporting those refugees, if we want to, if they are refugees, to which in many cases they are, to support those people in those countries, those children back where, you know, where it is they're travelling from. And, you know, there's a real case of foreign aid, not just for helping most vulnerable, which is very important, but actually for national self-interest to support the places that need support. And to, you know, to not create a situation where people are risking their lives on these dangerous channel crossings, they feel like it's their only hope. Mm. And also going after the people doing the smuggling rather than targeting the refugees themselves. So I think if the government got its head down on that stuff, I do think people will start to see, as you know, there is continual failure to sort this issue out, and the kind of the real kind of dog whistle ideas that are coming through from Priti Patel are really kind of not going to cut the mustard, and people will see through that.
Mm.
After all, Will, you know, if you're it doesn't matter if you're a kind of patriot or an internationalist or both. Mm. You know, Great Britain's traditional role is to support the vulnerable, to lead by example. And that's what makes many of us proud about our country, that, you know, we haven't always got everything right by any means, but we actually have a role to play in the world, which is kind of leading by example. And under this government, I don't think we're doing that on this issue or many others.
Mm, absolutely. Do you think as well, because another facet of the post-Brexit political landscape is the government attempting to build closer relationships with the United States and the Biden administration, seemingly unsuccessfully so far. But do you think there's an opportunity there for the Labour Party to learn from the Biden campaign in the 2020 presidential election, and also to build stronger links with the Biden administration to show, look, we're the alternative to the government. We're hoping to form the government after the next election. We want to build stronger connections with you.
Yeah, I think it's a fantastic opportunity. I think there's already some, you know, work going on behind the scenes to connect. To build those connections and build those relationships. I think a lot of what Biden's been doing has, you know, been really encouraging. How bold he's being, and, you know, from different issues, from climate change to his approach to kind of workers and jobs. And I think there's a real opportunity, particularly on the issue around good work and jobs. I think a big part of Renaissance's work, to already keep coming back to what we're doing, but on the we really want Labour to become, or to show itself to be, a party of primarily work and good jobs, hence our name, hence our historic mission. And this idea that that we really, I think John Crudus used this on your show the other week, and Biden's used it as well, this idea of good jobs that you can raise a family on. Mm. Is a fantastic phrase which really kind of encapsulates what Labour and the Democrats really need to be about, creating those good jobs, those opportunities for people wherever they are across Britain, or whether it's across the US, not just in the major cities, and kind of deal with the productivity crisis that we've got, and really kind of bringing that dignity at work kind of aspect. And I think that's an area where I think Labour could really lead the way with Biden in creating that narrative, which is still pro-business. We work with business to create jobs, we work with business to create the jobs that are going to power Britain forward. But there is a narrative there around the kind of lack of dignity in some of the newer jobs and new economy, and really supporting workers and supporting families and driving that good jobs renaissance.
Mm, absolutely. Looking forward to the next election, which may be in 2024, it may be sooner. What main things do you want to see the Labour Party focusing on the next election, not perhaps necessarily individual policies, but in terms of the themes that it's projecting to voters and the sort of like the themes of the election campaign.
Well, I think this idea around really, well, I think Labour, first of all, needs to show itself to be the natural home of working families once more. And that's not to say that we don't respect and believe in a welfare system that supports people who can't work or who are who have fallen on tough times and you know and don't have a job at that moment in time. But we should be absolutely focused on making sure work pays, making sure the wages are high enough so that you can you can raise a family, you can pay your rent, and obviously that fee, and the rent issue connects to the housing question you asked earlier, Will, around sorting out the housing market and so on. But I think this idea primarily that we are a party of good jobs, it should be the main focus. And you know, the truth is that the Tories, you know, they talk about creating jobs or whatever, but they haven't really shown themselves at any point, I don't think they will, to want to support the work. They love flexibility, and primarily they love flexibility in the labour market, right? So so they're not actually going to worry too much about the high percentage of British adults who don't know their working patterns for a week Monday, which is a big problem if you're trying to manage your family life or manage your social life. That kind of insecurity, that lack of lack of control, lack of power over your work situation. I think that is something that's come up when we spoke to people around it. The pendulum has swung far too far away from employees over the last 10 years. So there's that dignity piece, but there's also the job creation piece. And you touched on this earlier when you talked about Britain like standing on its own 2 feet. We need to be creating the jobs that power Britain through the next century, those green jobs, but also supporting those foundational timeless industries that aren't as sexy, but like things like steel, steel basically makes our infrastructure, it's critical for defence, critical for other, large parts of the economy, cutlery in our kitchen, the cars we drive, smart cars of the future. So we need to kind of make an argument for really creating and jobs, creating the right type of jobs that are gonna empower us through the future. So I think that's a real focus, and I think that in the context of the pandemic and the recovery and the new economy, the way the pandemic will inevitably change the shape of the economy, I think we need to be on top of that and ahead of the game on that, and talking about the future of work. And if I was to pick, one thing, that would be it. And also the security point that we talked about earlier, around a Britain that can better stand its own 2 feet.
Mm-hmm. We're coming towards the end of the podcast. It's been great to have you on, Joe, and I've got one final question. We touched upon COVID a little bit earlier, and also we spoke about the easing of restrictions, though of course a lot of people are still nervous about things, and things are far from fully back to normal. But when things are fully back to normal sometime in the hopefully not too distant future, what one thing that you haven't been able to do because of the pandemic are you most looking forward to being able to do again?
Me personally?
Yeah.
I'm quite looking forward to going on holiday, to be honest, Will. I've been quite, a lot of my hobbies are playing football and cricket, which have already started up, already. So I'm quite happy to be able to get back doing that. But just, being able to especially go on on holidays at home. I've enjoyed some of my holidays around England, actually, because there are parts of England that you wouldn't have necessarily been to if it wasn't the pandemic. And I really enjoyed that. But I think, maybe going to, for kind of break to a sunny beach in Europe when you can be sure of the weather, is probably the thing I'm most looking forward to. How about you? What about you?
Oh, well, yeah, I think a holiday would be something that I'm very much looking forward to, being able to get out in the world again and not to have the kind of worries that we've had because of the pandemic would be fantastic. If people want to find out more about Labour Renaissance, where should they go to find out more about you?
labour-renaissance.org.uk is the website. If you just Google Labour Renaissance, it should come up pretty quickly. And please do, anyone listening, please do sign up to our mailing list and support us. We're asking people to do a bit of research, if they don't mind, to kind of help Labour, those who want to help Labour become become electable again, really. To kind of join in with our research and just talk to a couple of people who formerly voted Labour but haven't recently. You obviously don't have to do that. If you haven't got time, do just sign up to our mailing list and keep in touch with us. And looking forward to a few events over the autumn and our first report coming out at the beginning of September.
Fantastic. Well, thank you once again for coming on the podcast, Jeb.
Thanks, Will. Much appreciated. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the podcast. If you've enjoyed it, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, Podbeam, and Amazon Music. You can also follow us on Twitter, @DebatedPodcast, like us on Facebook, Debated Podcast, and if you'd like to get in touch with us, whether about appearing on an episode of the podcast or commenting on an episode that you've listened to, you can do so at thedebatedpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. I hope you listen to the next one.